and a very good afternoon. Welcome to the airwaves. Back again for another chat. Dr. Kevin Walters, how are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. Looking forward to today.
Yes, yep. Me too. And I tell you what, I'm loving how people are actually writing in or ringing in and asking for questions. And that's what we're here for today. Right into the first of all questions for today.
Okay.
Is it too soon for people to get excited about a coronavirus COVID-19 vaccine, given the recent reports, allegations that COVID-19 can reinfect someone for the second time?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There's about three questions in there, but it's very topical at the moment.
Mm.
I think it is probably a bit soon for people to get excited about a vaccine. Most vaccines, I think the fastest vaccine from initiation to actual production is about 4 years. So, the world's been under the pump. But the great thing is we've got fantastic international cooperation. And we also had a bit of a jump on all of this because, if you remember, SARS and MERS, which are the same family of viruses as COVID-19, we had outbreaks on those. And quite a lot of people did a couple of years research on COVID-19, on coronavirus vaccines. That's the family of the virus. And obviously, they have similar structures and so ways of making vaccines from them. And unfortunately, like a lot of things, the funding got cut, a bit like Trump cutting the funding for his pandemic planning in the White House, which in retrospect wasn't a great idea. But those people were halfway through the research, and they've shared that, and people have picked it up. And I certainly know that there has been a primate trial. Poor monkeys have been injected with this thing, and I think after 1 month, they have shown still to have some antibodies and some protection. So there's a few things about the vaccines which are showing some hope, and we have to because. And I'll probably cover this a little bit later, but the problem with coronavirus is that we're hoping that if you get a vaccine, you get the ability to fight that, and so you don't get it a second time. The sad news, and no one really wants to talk about it, is that that may not be the case. And I think the main reason is that you've got to remember vaccinations are where we give someone either a live vaccine or a dead vaccine. So a live vaccine is where we give a weakened strain of the virus we're trying to give. And that produce, we make antibodies against that weak strain, and then we can fight the infection when it comes along. So-called dead vaccines, we basically get the bug and we chop it up into little pieces so it can't kill you, it's dead. You can't get, flu is the perfect example, that's a dead vaccine. So we've got chopped up little bits of flu virus. So your body recognises it and fights and makes an infection against it.
Okay.
So that may be a way away. The thing that makes this pretty tricky is that the coronavirus as a family is a very, very clever virus. It's been around for a very long time as a family. And we all know the answer to this question, unfortunately, which is if you get a cold, you can get a cold a month later. So having one infection of a coronavirus in a few months. And because we've only had this virus since January, even if we get a vaccine and they're starting vaccine trials, it's going to be 12 months before we know. And even in 12 months' time, we'll only know that it gives you coverage for 12 months. You know, we only know if it lasts for 5 years in 5 years.
Yes.
So I think it's a little bit early to get excited about it. I'm pretty hopeful that some of the best brains in the world are working on this, and there's a lot of pressure to do that. And
definitely,
the good news is there's international cooperation. So long answer, but I hope that answers a question. And just the second part of that question, can COVID-19 reinfect someone for the second time? Look, people are dying to know the answer to these questions, and I think the latest thing I read 3 days ago was that some of the case studies that was based on is that when they tested someone a bit later, they were possibly picking up dead virus, and it wasn't a live infection in that individual that had it a second time. So watch the space. I'm sure everyone out there will find out before I know the answer to that question.
I'm Probably too. Okay, question number two is a good one too. In your medical profession, do you think it is advisable to continue to treat people like they have the virus, especially with the common cold and flu seasons approaching?
Again, another great question. I assume by the question when they say they have the virus, mean COVID-19.
Yes.
So the answer is we've sort of briefly talked on this before about with winter approaching. If you remember, the viruses don't have a propensity for cold weather. It is that we gather together inside on colder days. And so it's human behaviour that drives that. And they're all infective viruses, influenza and the common cold. Unfortunately, especially on Norfolk Island, is that we are worried about COVID-19 coming again onto the island. We've already had it come on the island once. An infected person was on the island and they were infectious when they were here. We managed to cut that off in isolation. So we don't want it to come here. And if I have someone come into my surgery today, and I had someone yesterday with a cold or a flu, we have to assume that they have COVID-19.
Yes.
Because if we don't, then and let them out into the community, then we're repeating the mistakes of the is it the Rose Princess, the cruise ship, I think it is?
And Ruby Princess,
yes. Sorry. No, all these cruise ships sound the same.
I know, they're a cruise ship, just say cruise ship, they're all infected.
When they had suspicions, but they didn't have a positive swab, but they let people go out into the community. And that is the largest cluster in Australia and responsible for most the cases and the deaths in Australia.
Mm.
The second example is the second largest cluster, which I really don't want to like talking about, but where a nurse in a rest home went to work for 6 days when they were sick. They assumed they had a flu. There's now 11 dead people in that rest home and many infected. So, and if you think there's only 81 people dead in Australia yesterday and 11 of them were from my rest home from one person. So I think that's a salient lesson for us on Norfolk. I'll make no apologies that if you come in today and you've got a cold, I will swab you.
Mm.
But there's always two reasons why we do a test. One is to make sure you haven't got it or to prove you have.
Yes.
Sometimes we do neither. But that's what we do. We treat people as COVID. And this is something to touch on that a lot of people don't realise, is that this year we've had a fantastic take-up of the flu vaccine. I think we're going to have the best year for flu vaccine ever, so I'm excited about that.
Great.
And also we should have the best year for colds.
Yes, because no one's coming here.
If we haven't learned with COVID-19, with over 3 million people infected all over the world, that going to work when you're sick isn't a good idea, I don't think we'll ever learn that lesson. So if you've got a cold sniffle, don't go anywhere. Don't give it to other people.
Yes.
We can prove it's not COVID, and then you can go back and have contact with other people. And that's what we're going to do. Mm. In Australia, they're doing the same thing, and they're even talking about swabbing people who don't have symptoms.
Mm.
That is debatable. I mean, that's another topic.
Well, actually, that's the next question.
Oh, okay, I didn't see that.
Yes, so it says here, this is question number three, and everybody with Dr. Kevin Walters on radio, live radio Norfolk. And the third question is, given the television and radio news segments have often talked about possible contamination in the COVID-19 test kits, are the test kits sent to Norfolk Island guaranteed to be clean?
Well, the answer to that question is I'm not watching enough television or listening to enough radio because I haven't seen this report, so I'm unaware of it. So it's a bit tricky. I haven't heard of any contamination. I think the good news is that our swabs on the island were ordered way before COVID-19. These things have a very long shelf life of at least a few years.
Mm.
So we've got a couple of thousand, I think it is, swabs here. And we put those into a special viral solution that we've got, and we've got enough swabs for plenty. So, and there's no contamination.
No.
I think after many years of doing it, and certainly the lab staff and that on the island, we're very careful that there is no contamination. The other bit of good news is people, I think I've explained this before, the virus test we do is taking bits of the virus. And it's a DNA test. So you can't grow a wrong bug in there.
Mm.
And as long as it's processed early, and to be honest, because we weren't picking up many cases in the first few weeks, we did an audit and we did other mechanisms to double check that that wasn't because we was not storing them properly. We had a very rigorous process to make sure that we didn't have a high negative, false negative, which I've explained before.
Yes.
So we had a high number. We were certain that all the negative cases were actually negative.
Yes.
And that's a kind of a technical thing. But the answer is, no, we're absolutely fine. We're on the island. We're as good as any place in Sydney, if not better, because, you know, again, I won't be drawn into how many tests we do, but the number of tests we do is far beyond per capita than Australia. But because we're doing relatively few, we're not doing 5,000 tests in a day.
Sure.
So we're not rushing them.
Well, the population for a start.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, so we're doing a few tests a day. So it's pretty easy to get a few tests a day right.
Great. Well, that's good. And in actual fact, one of the questions for next week that we can probably touch on now, and you've already answered that, as how many tests have you done?
Okay. Well, again, I'm not going to get drawn into the number of tests because I said if I say we've done 100 tests or 1,000 tests, it'll be too much or not enough for anyone.
Yes.
But certainly when it comes to talking about our per capita tests is higher than most places in Australia.
That's excellent.
And we've done over 15 tests this week. So we're doing at least two a day, if not more. It varies from day to day, and obviously on the days when flights come in, if it's appropriate to do that. And if we have an outbreak of three or four people having some viral symptoms, we will aggressively test that. So we've constantly got suspected cases. People say, you know, have we got a suspected case or there hasn't been a case on the island? If we do a swab, it's because we suspect that person has COVID.
Mm.
And so we've always got tests coming back every single day.
Right. And the last question, number four, is, and I think you've kind of answered this, but I'll ask it anyway. Are there any benefits for people here to volunteer to have a COVID-19 test? And if the answer is yes, please explain the benefits.
I'll do the usual yes and no, I think, to answer that. Are there any benefits of here to volunteer? I really want to push something very, very important. If someone on the island has symptoms, then we really, really want to test you. Because if we find out 2 weeks later that you've got this, this is an incredibly contagious virus.
Mm.
And I don't want to find out that we've got it on the island by looking after someone and medevacking them. I want to find out when someone's got a runny nose. And even if you haven't travelled and you think, oh, well, if I don't tell the doctor, then I won't have to be swabbed and I won't have to self-isolate for a few days. I think it's your public duty to let us know.
I agree.
Because I think that's something. So is there any benefits? Absolutely. It's your public duty to do it.
Mm.
And the good thing about that, I've had some amazing discussions with people on the island in the last week. Again, I'm trying not to name individuals, but like this week I had a guy ring up, he had a cold, came home, we swabbed him, his wife rang, and they are going into self-isolation, and they're having to do it for 5 or 6 days at least because they just missed the flight for the swab.
Right.
And they see it as that, no, we've got to do the right thing. And it was actually really heartwarming to hear that attitude. They were like, no. And I said, look, it's a low probability, but we need to check it and we need to take it seriously. And they totally understood.
That's great.
So there is an enormous benefit. Is there a benefit in just coming and getting swabbed because you want to know? The answer is no.
Yes.
The success rate in people who don't have symptoms is very, very low. And I think this whole concept of asymptomatic spreaders we thought was a big issue, but actually the evidence is coming out now, and certainly this is more anecdotal stuff from the public health physicians in Sydney that we talk to daily almost. They're saying that a lot of people are saying, you're only testing people with symptoms, so of course that's the only ones. But because now they're testing people without symptoms who are contacts, what they're finding is the only people who have a positive test have symptoms. Yeah. Virtually no one who hasn't had symptoms, who they test, actually has it. And you can see that they've got those open-air testing in Sydney. And they're testing lots of people. The vast majority of them don't have any symptoms. And they're all negative. Mm. So I think what I think was initially happening is we know that people are contagious and very contagious for up to 48 hours before they develop symptoms themselves. I think that's the group that we're actually swabbing.
Yes.
So those people we're swabbing while they're contagious for 48 hours, coming up with a positive swab, and then 2 days later they develop symptoms. So we just swab them a bit early. We were a bit lucky.
Yes.
So I think the evidence out there is that this idea that there's all these hundreds of people running around is low. And I think there is one thing. I wasn't going to talk about anything today because I thought the questions were enough. But there is some concern about the virus. I think, have we got time for one more question?
Of course we have.
Okay, because I think you sent me a question, and I think it was for next week. I was asking about what an effect it has on the human body.
Yes.
And what is becoming evident is this is not a simple respiratory illness. It affects heart muscle. It affects brain tissue. It's got a very high rate of kidney complications. People, I think two-thirds of people who end up on ventilators in China, two-thirds of them had renal failure and needed dialysis as well. And the other sobering thing is 8 out of 10 people who end up on a ventilator die. They don't survive. So the all this concern about having enough ventilators, it's really the last hurrah. And the sad thing is that people don't do well on ventilators.
Mm.
So if you can avoid putting people on a ventilator, you do. And there's also some interesting, this is not to worry any parents out there, but certainly there is a new illness that's just coming out in the last couple of days.
Kawasaki.
Across Europe. Yeah, Kawasaki's disease, mm. which is a vasculitis. It's an inflammation, and it affects multiple organs in the body. And my reading of it, again, these are only what we call case reports. But this is an illness you hardly ever see. I think I've seen one in my career. And these are sprouting up all over Europe. And these are people who have an illness very similar to something called Kawasaki's, but it's actually a feature of the virus.
And it's affecting children.
Yes. So up till now, we thought they were relatively unwell. But the trouble is, when you get enough people infected and you start looking for these things, then we do find it. So disappointingly, I think it's a virus that we are going to find a lot more about.
Yes. Well, everyone's learning about it, aren't they?
You know,
everyone's learning about COVID. I mean, it's an enemy. It's like going to war. You've got an invisible enemy there that everyone, all you people in that profession, are trying to learn about it. And like you say, when each time you come here, every day it's different.
Yeah, the benefit of hindsight, even looking back now, of what it did. But I think, and I've been saying this on numerous occasions, anyone who's listened to me, is that the most important thing is to learn the other mistakes. It's clear that England, I think, today is going to become the worst country affected in Europe. The United States has over a million cases.
Mm.
I think there's actually more than that because they're seriously underreporting and not testing. We align ourselves with Australia and New Zealand. The only defence we have is stopping people coming in and social distancing. Unfortunately, we've slipped ahead of Australia in lifting our things, and we can probably talk about that next week. But we were the first to go to total lockdown, and unfortunately, even this week, I know of at least one case of people breaking quarantine.
Mm.
And the last time that happened, we had to go to a level 4. Now, I'm not telling them what to do at all. It's their decision. I don't think they probably will. I don't think the incident was enough to warrant it.
Mm.
But if we have further things like that, we've got the prospect of possibly going to another lockdown. I think the status we're in at level 3 at the moment, again, it's their decision, it's not mine, is adequate, and we're opening up the markets, I hear this morning, which is fantastic, as long as the social distancing. Mm. But I would be very disappointed if we went to a lower level over the next while, because we're lagging seriously behind Australia if we're doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And one good thing, I guess, about this community being so caring and loving is no one wants to be the carrier or the cause of spreading COVID here. So everyone's going to pretty much 99.999% will do the right thing, but also not having flights coming in, because in the police report this morning, Sergeant Elder said, you know, only a handful of people are coming to the island. So that in itself, and the fact that people are pretty careful, hopefully will hold us in good stead. Yes.
There, you can look at the... You're looking at the look on my face. I screw up my face because I think I say this every time I come in. It's a bugbear. Mm. We are in a state of emergency.
Yes.
So people do not have to travel here.
Mm.
Every single week, because I ring up the people who are in isolation. I had another two this week. And that is people who are not intending to be residents. They were previous residents. They lived here 6 or whatever years ago. And I'm not naming those individuals, but there are other individuals that keep coming back and they're under pressure from their family, or their family here are not dissuading them. But every single person that comes onto the island is a risk.
Oh.
And so if we've got 8 people, that's 8 times the risk one. And I've said this right from the beginning. As the restrictions lift, when we lose the state of emergency sometime this year, I imagine, who knows, then anyone can come and live here who has lived here previously. But if you're stable and you're in Australia, you've got to remember this isolation, the 2 weeks, is a theoretical thing. There is a risk with it. And if we keep throwing that dice, we're going to come up, well, I want to say Trump's, but that's an unfortunate term.
Yes.
Especially from the USA. But that's what we're going to end up with. Mm. And it's serious. And you've really got to, I know it's really hard. I want to have my family here.
Gosh, don't we all? Exactly.
It's not worth even one death.
No. Because one leads to another and another, as we all know. It's written.
And even if you don't care, even if you don't care about people and death and what's going on, think of the economics.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, either way, it'll take the tourism down. Whichever way you go, people won't want to come here. So you've got to look at the crystal ball in a sensible, common sense approach and just hope that everyone continues to do the same and right thing.
I don't think Wuhan or Italy is going to be really worried about having tourism over the next year or two.
No, I'm sure they're not.
But we don't want to become another one of those.
Oh, gosh, no, we don't. Anyway, Dr. Walters, always great to talk to you, and we'll catch up again next week. Thank you very much.